This is the Protestant Libertarian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and part of the Christians for Liberty Network. I really hope that you guys enjoy today's show. All right, guys, welcome to another bonus episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. Good to have you guys on the show today. This isn't going to be a very long one, but I figured in light of the show that came out on Tuesday, where I talked to Doug Stewart and Cody Cook about progressive Christianity and Christian nationalism and the relationship between the two, I might as well do an episode where I actually read the article that I wrote for the Libertarian Christian Institute, where I argue that progressive Christianity is just a left-wing variation of Christian nationalism. And as I've said when I've done these episodes before, I know that a lot of you people are very busy and you don't have time to read articles. And I know that there are probably many of you that were like, that article sounded really interesting, but you'll never have the time to sit down and read it. And I don't feel bad or blame you at all, because there are people that send me articles all the time and I open them up on my phone and read the first paragraph and I'm like, man, this sounds really interesting. I'm going to get to this later on. And then 4 months later, as I'm closing out all of the tabs on my web browser on my phone, I realize that I never actually read that article and can't even remember who sent it to me. So I get it. I get it. I'm in the same position. Sometimes it's just easier for me to listen to these articles than it is to go onto the internet and read them for myself. So no judgment here. But I wanted to go ahead and read through that article because I think I make a lot of really important points in that article that might reshape the way that we think about progressive Christianity. Because there is, as I'm going to mention in the article and maybe even talk about a little bit after I'm done reading it, there is this sense by people on the Christian left that they are morally superior to Christian nationalists because they don't want to use political power to enforce their theological values on society. But in fact, that's exactly what they want to do. When progressive Christians support taxation of the rich, when they support universal public schooling, when they support all kinds of redistributive programs or whatever it might be, they are using their theological values to impose their will upon society through the powers of government. Structurally, no different than Christian nationalism. And in this article, I'm going to explain why that is the case. So, like I said, I'm going to read this article for us real quick here, and then we will discuss it briefly and get you out of here in a really short period of time today. So, here we go. Progressive Christian nationalism. Christians are not immune from the increasingly overheated American political climate. A very real war is being waged, in fact, within American Protestantism. My fear is that this war has already been lost. The two belligerents, in a lamentably predictable manner, march in lockstep with the current political divide between the so-called left and the so-called right in American public life. Standing on one side of the battlefield are the progressive Christians, alternatively labeled as deconstructed or ex-evangelical, who claim that their commitment to concepts such as social justice and equity are at the heart of true Christianity. Biblical authority and historical doctrine are measured not by the witness of Scripture, but by their congruence, or, more significantly, incongruence with social justice and equity, terms which are defined in ways that look suspiciously like the policy platforms promoted by the radical wing of the Democratic Party. On the opposite side of the battlefield are the supposed mortal enemies of progressive Christians, the Christian nationalists. This manifestation of modern Protestantism is committed to making, they would, of course, prefer the term remaking, America as an explicitly Christian nation. Led by outspoken thinkers like Stephen Wolfe, William Wolfe, and Doug Wilson, the Christian nationalists see progressives, and progressive Christians in particular, as threatening the uniquely Christian character of the United States of America and seek to enshrine biblical morality as they interpret it into laws and customs. Their policy proposals, like a mirror image of the progressive Christian agenda, bear a striking resemblance to a particular brand of post-2016 MAGA conservatism. It is conventional post-moral majority Republican Christianity wearing a red hat bearing a tag that states "Made in China." These two sides are engaged in furious combat, leaving a trail of social, political, and theological casualties in their wake. Neither side appears to be nearing defeat. Quite the contrary. These two combatants are clearing out any middle ground, either radicalizing moderate Protestants into their respective camps or pushing them out of the center and into other traditions, or indeed, away from any tradition at all. In the fight between Christian nationalism and progressive Christianity appears to have devolved into a bloody trench warfare-style stalemate, then why claim at the outset of this article that this war has been lost? The reason is simple. Christian nationalists and progressive Christians are on the same team. What we are witnessing is not a conflict between opposing ideologies, but rather a civil war between two groups of American Protestants who believe that the only path to victory is through the authoritarian power of the state. Let me explain. Stephen Wolfe is the author of The Case for Christian Nationalism, which was published in 2022 on Canon Press, a book which I have reviewed extensively in print and on my show, The Protestant Libertarian Podcast, which you're obviously currently listening to. His book has become the benchmark articulation of the doctrine of Christian nationalism, which Wolfe defines as a totality of national action consisting of civil laws and social customs conducted by a Christian nation as a Christian nation in order to procure for itself both earthly and heavenly good in Christ. And that comes from page 9 of his book. Before I move on, I want to make the point, too, that you can go to libertarianchristians.com and read my very long review of Stephen Wolfe's book. And I would highly recommend, if you want to know what Stephen Wolfe is advocating for, that you go and do that. Don't spend money on the book and don't read it. It's 450 pages that really could have been condensed into about 50, and it would have been just as effective. He's very long-winded and very wordy, so there's really no reason for you to go and read it. I've already done that for you, so if you want to know what Stephen Wolfe thinks in his book, The Case for Christian Nationalism, which many progressive Christians who criticize him have not actually read, you can go and take a look at my article, and I explain why it is so theologically and politically incoherent. I just wanted to add that in as an aside. So for our present purposes, getting back to the article, there are three important aspects of Wolfe's definition that arise from his book. Here are the three aspects. First, and most importantly, the laws and customs of a nation should reflect Christian values. Second, the goal of Christian laws and customs are to procure earthly and heavenly good. Christian laws will, perhaps even progressively, lead to a better society. Finally, Christian nationalism, unsurprisingly, conceptualizes itself in national terms. It is not an international movement like classical Marxist communism, and it presupposes national integrity and cohesion as a necessity for political stability. While Wolfe and other Christian nationalist thought leaders further expand, refine, and nuance this definition, these three insights undergird the basic structure of Christian nationalism. This might seem like a shocking proposal, and it is certainly true that the policy prescriptions of both camps reveal substantial differences, but the underlying substructure of both the progressive and the nationalist positions are fundamentally the same. To clarify this point, it helps to listen to what leading progressive Christian thinkers are actually saying about the relationship between church and state. A few examples should suffice. Tim Whitaker, the founder of the New Evangelicals, a popular network of progressive Christians, said this in a Twitter post last year. Imagine if evangelicalism partnered with the government and people of other faiths to help bring heaven to earth instead of declaring war on everything that isn't them. While the New Evangelicals has in many ways been heroically opposed to Christian nationalism, is this really any different from the idea that laws should reflect Christian values, in this case, progressive Christian values, in order to, as Stephen Wolfe puts it, procure earthly and heavenly good? While this statement doesn't explicitly call for any particular legislation, the idea that the church should partner with the government and help bring heaven to earth presupposes that the logical conclusions of this church-state partnership would result in a shift in state policy. Wolfe also wants to reshape the government for the good, of course. The rhetorical similarities between Wolfe's position and Whitaker's vision of the role of the church in American politics are remarkably similar. We should not miss the forest for the trees. Whitaker and Wolfe would probably disagree on most policy proposals, but they would both agree that policy should reflect theology and be implemented by the state. Another excellent example of this dynamic is Zach Lambert, pastor of Restore Austin in Austin, Texas. Lambert has, like Whitaker, clearly and accurately spoken out against Christian nationalism. For that, he should be commended. His vision for America, however, is functional equal to that of Stephen Wolfe. He outlines policies that he would like to see enacted at the federal level in this post. Yes, I would like for the government to intervene, raising the minimum wage to $15 per hour, updating to the poverty line, and Medicaid expansion would be a great start. Fair enough. These are standard progressive policy positions. Lambert would, however, equate these policies with the moral consequences that result from his Christian faith. He is advocating for laws that reflect his Christian values to bring about earthly good and advocate that these laws should be imposed by the federal, read, national government. To ask again, how is this structurally any different than Stephen Wolfe? Sure, Lambert might wisely avoid legislating against public profanity and skipping church on Sunday, but he is quite comfortable with enabling wealthy, well-connected politicians in faraway Washington, D.C. to regulate how much a small business owner in economically troubling times are required to pay a teenage employee. He might argue that it is for the greater good. He might even argue that this reflects the heart of God. So does Wolfe. Again, the structural problem remains. Both want to use the power of the state to implement policies that are derived from personal theological commitments. A third example of this phenomenon comes from Reverend Benjamin Kramer, a Wesleyan pastor whose post I often retweet because I think he's addressing fundamentally correct problems. He is also an advocate for progressive policies that are based on his Christian faith. Imagine if we Christians pursued dismantling systems of poverty, barriers to health care, demand livable wages, paid family leave, affordable child care, and ruthlessly work to end violence with the same passion so many of us pursue winning a culture war. All of these policies, if enacted, would of course be imposed by the federal government and require bureaucrats with guns to ensure that every company, no matter how small, complies with this new dictate. This is, once again, a form of Christian nationalism. It is a vision of society that is explicitly informed by Kramer's theological perspective, which would be enacted through law by the federal government of our nation in order to procure earthly and heavenly good. While the policies promoted by the nationalists and the progressives are indeed radically different, their basic political posture is nevertheless identical. Our group's theological values need to be enshrined in law. We want the culture to reflect these values. We expect the national government to implement them, and we believe that they will lead us all towards the, not a, which is an important philosophical distinction, greater good. The future of humanity depends on our values being imposed on society through law. After all, it is for their own good, right? The progressive Christian may claim to be against nationalism, but it takes little more than a cursory glance through progressive Christian Twitter to demonstrate their commitment to the philosophical concept of nationalism in its American form. January 6th in Ukraine, anyone? Suffice it to say, Raytheon and Lockheed Martin would be on the side of the progressive Christians. Also, it is telling that progressive Christians, by and large, take a top-down approach to progressive social change. Why is it that the conversation is always aimed at implementing these policies through the federal government instead of through state and local governments? The entire nation must conform to the progressive Christian political agenda. This is one of the many practical consequences of nationalism and demonstrates yet again the fundamental logic of progressive Christian nationalism. All of this supports my thesis that the major contemporary conflict within American Protestantism is an intellectual and cultural civil war. Just as libertarians understand that the political spectrum is not left-right, but rather authoritarian-libertarian, Christians need to come to terms with the reality that the differences between progressive Christianity and Christian nationalism are a chimera. Like communism and fascism, they are nothing less than the same authoritarian haunted house concealed by a shiny facade of policy disagreements. The underlying authoritarianism and the dramatically destructive consequences are ultimately the same. If Hayek, Mises, Rothbard, and Sowell were commentators on Christian culture, they would wholeheartedly agree. None of this is to disparage the intention of progressive Christians, especially the ones with which I have engaged in this article. All three of them are worth a follow, often offer thought-provoking commentary, and sincerely want a better future for the entire human race. That alone is certainly commendable. As libertarians, we also want to see an end to poverty, mass incarceration, homelessness, racism, discriminatory legal practices, and more, including the ones that enrich U.S. defense contractors. We also want to see stable families, a prosperous domestic economy, and religious freedom. We just understand that the heavy-handed authoritarianism of the state can't solve these problems. In fact, the state itself is the biggest perpetrator of these crimes against humanity, and both the nationalists and progressives fail to see the second or third order consequences of their social, political, and economic policy proposals. They aren't good Austrians, after all, or they haven't read Thomas Sowell's Economic Facts and Fallacies. Either way, they are more similar than they would like to admit, and if the war between the progressives and nationalists draws to a conclusion, the winning side would likely be accused of fratricide. Another point to consider that I owe to a private conversation with the great CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, Doug Stewart. Sorry, Doug, I'm not trying to compare you to Donald Trump here. The CEO of the Libertarian Christian Institute, Doug Stewart, is the thought experiment of a progressive Christian repentance of 45 himself, Mr. Donald J. Trump. If Trump gave a speech in which he acknowledged that the progressive Christians were correct and that we need a $15 minimum wage or more, why be so greedy? Student loan forgiveness and a more radical and aggressive affirmative action? Would the progressives balk if he declared his new campaign slogan to be "Make America Christian Again"? Would progressive Christians really have a problem with that? The more perceptive progressives might realize that his promise to drain the swamp resulted in a much bigger swamp, and the petty partisan politics that result in a sports team level of irrational fidelity to the ruling political party. Of course, as a Northern Kentucky native, I live in Cincinnati Bengals country and understand the desperate but eventually satisfying payoff of supporting a losing team. But this change of heart might make some progressives reconsider their opposition to free minds and free markets. Such are the consequences of living in a world where few people understand the value of having substantial political principles. Unlike the Christian nationalist, the progressives do occasionally see the fatal flaws of nationalism. Benjamin Cramer correctly notes in another Twitter post, a Christianity that acts as though it needs a political party, a president, a Supreme Court, and a government to secure, maintain, and impose the will of its God on our culture is a Christianity that doesn't really believe its God is powerful enough to stand on its own at all. With this sentiment, I am, of course, in wholehearted agreement. But these ideas are mutually irreconcilable with progressive Christianity, which can only accomplish social justice through the coercive monopoly power of the state. My hope is that more Christians will be awakened to the reality that neither side has the answer to the problems plaguing our society, and that the only real solution is for the church to preach the gospel and embody radical, cruciform love for others. This doesn't mean voting for men with guns to force people to go to church or pay a teenager above market wages. It means internalizing the separation of church and state and rejecting any attempts to impose our values on society through force. The message of the resurrection is powerful enough. We don't need any help from the state. If we are ever to call an armistice to this intra-Protestant war, it must begin with rejecting the political will to power inherent in both conservative Christian nationalism and its equally authoritarian twin sibling. Progressive Christian nationalism is, when we strip it down to the basics, just another form of nationalism. Now, I really wanted you guys to hear that because I think that the case that I make in this piece here is very accurate. And again, if you look at Stephen Wolf's basic structural proposal for Christian nationalism, that it is the role of the Christian nationalist to impose their theological values on society for the good of society using the national government, there really is no difference between Stephen Wolf's position and the position of the progressive Christians. There's none whatsoever, structurally speaking. And again, as I mentioned in the article, superficially, and this is one of the biggest problems with the way that people perceive politics in the United States in general, is that they have a superficial understanding of politics. They look at the policies that people are enacting instead of trying to strip those policies down to their philosophical presuppositions. There really is no difference between the progressive Christians wanting to impose their progressive vision on society through the national government and the Christian nationalists that want to do the exact same thing. The policies are dramatically opposed to each other. A Christian nationalist America looks a lot different than a progressive Christian America, but the authoritarian substructure is exactly the same. There's no fundamental philosophical difference between those two camps. And I think that it's high time we start making that a very, very, very significant point in our political discussions. Now, this episode is going to come out, I believe, in March. I think maybe this is the first or second week in March that this episode will be released to the public, along with my conversation with Doug Stewart and Cody Cook, which you need to go back and listen to. It's a very balanced and nuanced take on progressive Christianity and its relationship to Christian nationalism. But I'm making you a guarantee right now, and this is something that I become increasingly frustrated with by American Protestantism. There are a lot of people in the year 2024, over the next 7 or 8 months, who are Christians on both sides of the political aisle, conservative and progressives, and they're going to continue to have their battles, and it's going to mostly focus on the culture wars and on other things of that nature, but they will refuse to ignore the underlying philosophical issues and even some of the most important empirical ones. And in my opinion, you have to reckon with the fact that both sides of Christians, whether you're a Catholic, whether you're a Protestant, it does not matter. Everybody wants to give the state more authoritarian power. All of these conservatives that say that they're limited government, they're only limited government when it comes to issues that they don't like. That's the only time that they're limited government. And all of these progressives that say that they believe in natural rights, they only like natural rights when they're the kinds of progressive natural rights that correspond to the Democratic Party platform. That's wrong. That whole way of looking at politics, that whole way of conceptualizing the role of government is just inherently, fundamentally wrong. And I'm also going to make this prediction about the political commentation is not a word, about the political commentary of Christians in 2024 headed into the next election. The two biggest issues that are plaguing our country and that have haunted us ever since the beginning of the 20th century are the Federal Reserve, which has the power to completely devalue all of our currency. It undermines savings and frugality and responsibility and hard work, completely undermines it. No one will talk about the Federal Reserve and the fact that Jerome Powell is probably one of the most powerful human beings on the face of the planet. No Christian, except for us libertarians, are going to be bringing that up this election cycle. They will be completely silent on that issue, even though it's the Federal Reserve that has decimated the American economy. And the fact that the Federal Reserve has rubber stamped every single money printing scheme since its implementation in 1913. It's no coincidence that over the last 100-something years, 110 years, 111 years, that we've had more financial crises than at any point before that in American history. It's because of the Federal Reserve, and that will be completely ignored. And the other thing, I think the even more important and frustrating thing, is that American foreign policy is going to be completely ignored. Because what happens predictably is that the progressives and the Christian nationalists line up on either side of the debate. The progressives were in favor of our support for Ukraine, despite the fact that the entire war on terror was a complete disaster, complete unmitigated disaster that destroyed the lives of millions of people in the Middle East. Completely unjustified, completely reckless, completely illegal, completely immoral, bipartisan support. Bush, Obama, Trump, Biden, all of them. And again, the roots of the war on terror go back even to the 1970s. Every political party, every president is a war criminal in the war on terror in my lifetime. There's no exception to that. And every single Christian, left, right, center, will be silent on that issue. When it comes to Ukraine, the progressives lined up behind the Ukrainians because they believe what the mainstream media was talking about after the 2016 election, that Russia was somehow meddling in American elections, even though the evidence for that was lacking, and that Donald Trump was somehow in cahoots with Vladimir Putin to overthrow the American political system, even though we know that that Russiagate scandal was, that it was unfounded. There was just no evidence for that. So you had the conservatives who, for once in my lifetime, were actually against a war. The war in Ukraine. For once in my lifetime, they were actually against the war. And the progressives were on the favor of funding the Ukrainians. But then as soon as the conflict in Israel breaks out, what happens? The progressives line up behind the Palestinians. The conservatives line up behind Israel. And we're right back into that same binary left-right debate. I think that if you are a Christian, you should be against all war. It doesn't matter if you're a conservative. It doesn't matter if you're a progressive. If you take your Christian faith seriously, then at what point do we have to just acknowledge that America is the great world empire? It's the modern instantiation of Babylon, and we should be against all American military imperialism. And that really has to be the thing that we come out against as a church. I don't think there's any more important issues than in the world right now than America's reckless foreign policy. Again, if you look at, I've done some episodes on this in the past, but if you look at Brown University, they have an entire institute that is devoted to trying to calculate the cost of the war on terror. $7 trillion we've spent fighting wars in the Middle East over the last 23 years. 4.5 million people in the Middle East dead because of American intervention. 7,000 U.S. servicemen and women killed in combat, 30,000 committed suicide since coming back. This is unsustainable. And these culture war issues about transgender bathrooms and about, you know, all that stuff, it is nothing compared to what has happened overseas over the last 20 years, and Christians on both sides of the aisle completely ignore it. I didn't really expect to go on a rant over all this stuff, but I just felt like that was important to bring up at the end of this article. We have to realize that the progressive Christians and the Christian nationalists are no different. And their vision for society, while the policies that would be enacted are obviously very different structurally, it's more authoritarianism. And again, there's no actual challenge to the power of American hegemony on either side of this debate. None whatsoever. The only people that are actually speaking out against empire, in my perspective, in the year 2024, are the Christian libertarians, and that's a very small, minority of American Christianity. And that's a shame, because I think we need more people that are out there saying, hey, you know what? We can't continue to allow the federal government to have a monopoly on the world currency, and we can't continue to just allow our military to invade and bomb and entangle ourselves in foreign countries that are literally of no strategic threat to the United States of America at all. Bring all the troops home, end all the foreign wars, and I guarantee you we'd solve a lot of problems around the world. All right, that's all I got to say about that. I kept you guys on way longer than I wanted to. Thank you guys for listening to the end of this episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. As always, I was very kind to all of you by submitting a large portion of my life last summer to reading Stephen Wolfe's book so that you didn't have to. So if you have questions about this, please reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to answer those questions, talk to you about my thesis here today. I think it's very, very important. And again, I would love to, you guys know me, my audience knows me. I would love to have any of the progressive Christians that I mentioned in this article. I do have a lot of respect for them, because I think they have reflexively, they are concerned about issues that really matter, even though I don't agree with their policy solutions. And I think that they've all been very good at combating Christian nationalism. So that article wasn't designed to trash them or denigrate them, just show them that structurally, and show others that structurally their position is fundamentally no different than that of the Nationalists. I'd be happy to have any of those people on, or if they have a show, I'd be happy to go on their show and just explain my position to try to help at least get people thinking about these issues, about how we can reframe the way that we understand politics in 2024. I think we desperately need something different. And I hope that we can contribute to that conversation here. As always, thank you guys so much for listening to the show today, and I will see you guys on Tuesday. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to me at theprotestantlibertarian@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter. You can follow me at the handle @ProLibertyPod. Again, that is @ProLibertyPod. And you can also visit me at theprotestantlibertarianpodcast.com. At theprotestantlibertarianpodcast.com, you can also support the Christians for Liberty Network and the Libertarian Christian Institute. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we will see you next Tuesday.